Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or Black Forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to At The Movies with me, Umar Pagan and PK Pagan.
So Mark, just before you, before we start, if I could just get you to introduce yourself and what you do, just so I can get my levels all right. Hi, I'm Mark Wolper, etc., etc.
Yep. Hello, I'm Mark Wolper. I'm the executive producer of Roots. And my father, David Wolper, produced the original Roots.
That's right, he did. I was a huge fan of your dad's work. I mean, LA Confidential, a whole bunch of stuff that he did influenced me greatly growing up because I would watch all of that.
Wow, okay. Well, he definitely influenced me as well.
So, Mark, is that what inspired you to take on this project? I mean, your father's history with it?
Well, you know, I did inherit sort of the legacy of doing the new Roots. And for many, many years, I was very, very against doing it. You know, I was scared of trying to do a remake of one of the most successful television shows of all time in American history. I was scared of dealing with the issues that it deals with because of all the problems that we have in America right now. And then the sort of third strike was, you know, trying to do a project in the shadow of my father. So I was very much against ever doing Roots again.
Before we get into why you changed your mind, tell us how important was Roots. Tell us about the impact of that original series in 1977.
Well, you know, nobody, I think, realized how powerful or important or successful the first Roots was going to be. Everybody was just making what they thought was just another random, normal television show. Yes, they realized that it was, you know, more African Americans in a TV show than ever before, but that was the only thing that was distinguishable about it. The television networks in America, though, when they saw the final product, they looked at it and they felt very strongly that it was not going to be successful. So instead of having it go on for 10 weeks in a row in what is called sweeps, the very important time to have a TV show in America,
yeah,
they decided to bury it all in 1 week in January, a very bad week, and just put it all in the same week so that they would only ruin 1 week of television. And it ended up being the most successful dramatic television show in American history. It was in the time when everybody had to watch TV at the same time, and 72% of the country was watching it at the same time. That means that there was nobody working in factories or restaurants or stores because they were all home watching it, and it didn't matter because there were no customers to go to the restaurants or the stores or the factories because they all started to want to be home at 8 o'clock every night to watch Roots.
So what made you change your mind?
I decided that it was time for my 16-year-old boy to see Roots that his grandfather produced that, you know, sort of spoke to a lot of the problems in America today. And I thought it would be important for him to see it. And he really was not interested in seeing it. I had to literally force him to sit down and watch it, the whole miniseries. And when it was over, he said, hopefully not the last wise thing he ever says, but it was certainly the first wise thing he ever said. He goes, you know what, Daddy? I understand why Roots is important, but it's like your music. It doesn't speak to me.
Hmm.
And it was in that moment that I realized why I have to overcome all my fears, the fear of my father's shadow, the fears of the current political situation in America, the fears of the success of the original, and go, you know, who gives a damn? We got to do it. We have to tell the story again, translate it to the language of the new generation of America, because they need to see this history. They need to to watch this and understand the roots of why we have social, racial issues in America today.
Because it hasn't really changed all that much. I mean, you know, I was in Chicago in 2008 when Obama got elected. I was in Grant Park and we're all talking about a post-racial America. But of course, you know, given the current election season, it seems like we've regressed a little bit.
Yeah, I like to believe we haven't regressed. Maybe we have. But I think what probably is more likely is we haven't moved fast enough. We haven't moved as quickly as we should move. And, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with this fear in America we have of, like, confronting the issue and talking about it. Everybody's very worried about being politically correct. And, you know, I think we need to get out and discuss it and debate it and look at it. And that's why I felt it was important to make this miniseries. All right, let's put it in front of everybody. Let's try to spark the conversation again, because art, which I like to believe that film and television can often be art, is art. Art is always the thing that sparks conversation, debate, revolution, movement, change, discussion. It always starts with art. So hopefully, you know, Roots can do that. And by the way, hopefully it could be a really fun show to watch as well.
Of course, yeah. I mean, it is still entertainment. But you're absolutely right. And, you know, I like to think of film and cinema as going even beyond the traditional arts, because the medium that you control or that you produce for has a greater impact and an almost instant impact, not just to folks watching in your hometown, but thousands of miles away in Kuala Lumpur, where I am.
We hope that that happens. You know, we all do... Or as a filmmaker, I do different kinds of things. I mean, there's some things we do strictly for commerce or just because it's fun. And there's some things that we hope have a deeper, more important meaning. I don't think you could do a project that has a more deeper meaning than doing something like Roots. There's an obligation and a responsibility to do it right, to do it better than the first one, or believe that we can do it better than the first one, approach it hoping that we can do it better than the first one, an obligation and a responsibility to what's going on in America today, and an obligation and a responsibility to, you know, the future and understanding how to make this more the music of my child.
The original series had an impact over here. I mean, I was growing up and I remember an uncle of mine used to call me Kunta Kinte because I was a thin, scrawny, dark kid, right? I had no idea what it meant at the time. And of course, you know, you always have this fat, annoying cousin that, you know, kind of points out that, oh, you know, I think he's insulting you because you're black. And initially, I reacted badly to that until my uncle actually told me, no, Kunta Kinte is the hero in this show. He's the guy who makes it. He's the guy who sets up a generation. And yeah, it did have an impact, even though I'm so far removed from African-American history.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because a lot of people say, well, you know, do you think this Roots can have impact globally because it's such a distinctly American story? And I argue that it's not. And the reason for that is also connected to the reason why I think it was so successful. Because it is a story of a family. It's not a story of history. It's not a story of politics. It's not a story of race. Actually, at its core, it's a story about a family that survives adversity. And we can all relate to that because we're all part of a family. We're all part of trying to retain our identity of who we are as a family or who we are as a people. And that's multicultural because every race, every nation has its issues as it relates to our borders, racial tension. The slave trade, the American slave trade, was the largest forced migration in the history of this planet. What is going on in Europe and the Middle East right now? A sort of forced migration. And slavery is alive and well all over the world.
What a lineup in the original, right? You had LeVar Burton, John Amos, O.J. Simpson, Ben Vereen, Louis Gossett Jr., Ed Asner. Was it as important to you to cast? I mean, because you've got a great lineup in this one as well. You've got Lawrence Fishburne, you've got Anna Paquin, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. How important was it for you to have this kind of all-star cast to carry this show as well?
I didn't need as many. You know, I remember sitting around and listening to my father say, listen, we're doing a show where the black people are the good guys and the white people are the bad guys. In a country where 70% of the people are white and 30% of the people are black. So I better put some really famous faces in the miniseries so I could get everybody to come to it. I didn't have that same concern, but my concern was different. If I was going to translate this film for my 16-year-old son, I need to put faces in it that he will connect with, that he knows. He knows Mobius, Lawrence Fishburne, right?
Yes.
He knows who that is. He watches a show in America called Blackish, you know, which Lawrence Fishburne is in. So I knew that would be somebody he would connect with. We have an actor named P.I. who's a big rapper in the United States
that
my son listens to. So I had to put a few names in that he would recognize. But I also felt strongly that we had a responsibility to be more honest in this miniseries because the audiences for TV now are much more sophisticated than they were in the late 70s. So to keep it honest, I didn't put any names in any of the Kunta Kinte, Alex Haley family line. That was basically all unknown. Malachi Kirby, who plays Kunta Kinte, Nika Noni Rose, relatively unknown, except for she was a princess in a Disney animated film, the voice of. In the family line, we tried to go with unknowns to keep it authentic. But, you know, sprinkled around in the rest of it, we did put some big names because obviously we need people to come see it. If nobody comes and sees it, then what was the point of making it?
How difficult was it to cast Kunta Kinte? Because yet again, you've got LeVar Burton, who was so compelling to watch in the original.
Well, the first thing I had to do in casting the Kunta Kinte role is I had to get LeVar Burton on board as a producer with me, which I did. I decided what better person to help me find the new Kunta Kinte than I don't want to say old Kunta Kinte, the previous Kunta Kinte. That was great, bringing him on and saying, all right, we're going to find Kunta Kinte together. He goes, oh, God, this is a scary thought. I go, come on, let's go. This would be fun. So we planned this whole six-month, 13-country, 4,000 people. 1,000 people went on tape. 300 people were seen, you know, in person. This whole complicated, very expensive casting thing we were going to do because we knew that we had to get the right Kunta Kinte. All this was planned and ready to go. 4 days after we started casting, we found Malachi Kirby. Now, we couldn't possibly believe that after 4 days, this was the guy. After we made all these plans to travel all over the world, so we said, all right, Malachi, sit on the side, because if we found you in 4 days, there's got to be somebody better out there. We spent the whole 6 months working, traveling, going, tapes, interviews, auditions, directors traveling around to meet people. We came all the way back around and hired the guy that we met 4 days after the beginning of casting.
But poor Malachi, he must have been stressed out for about 6 months.
He was extremely stressed out. He almost took another project, but he held out for it. And interesting, it's funny you say the Kunta Kinte story. When he was growing up, he was called Kunta Kinte, and he also didn't know what it meant. He saw it as a derogatory term, or he felt it was a derogatory term because the other white kids in his school were calling him that. He was growing up in England, and it wasn't until later in his life when his mother sat him down to watch Roots that, just like you, he said, wait a minute, Kunta Kinte is a hero.
I was looking through some of the directing credits as well, and you've got a great lineup of people directing episodes. You've got Philip Noyce, you've got Bruce Beresford, who did Driving Miss Daisy, you've got Thomas Carter, Mario Van Peebles. That must have been great, working with all of these directors.
It was fantastic. Listen, this was true of actors and directors. There were two responses when we would call somebody and say, we want you to do this show. Either one was, there is no way I am touching that. That's too iconic. That's too classic. I want nothing to do with it. And the other side, all the way on the other extreme, that were like, oh my God, this is fantastic. I want on. What do I got to do? How do I get on board? I want to do this. There was nothing in between. So from the list of people that were all aboard, you know, we had the pick of anyone we wanted because so many people were so interested in trying to translate it again to a new version of this. It was really great to have that opportunity to sort of pick and choose. And we found out after meeting people, a lot of people, that the thing that made our choice easiest was when we discovered people that had some kind of emotional or historical connection to the story of Roots or to the story of the family. So for Philip Noyce in Night One, he is married to a South African woman. His children are therefore, you know, half South African African and half white Australian. But his oldest son is interested in going through the traditional African manhood training, which is what all of Night One is about. And he wanted to do the film. So here it was. I had a guy who's directed some of my favorite films of all time, which is, by the way, Rabbit Proof Fence, one of my number one films of all time. And his son wants to go through traditional manhood training. That was a slam dunk. All right, Philip Noyce is in. So that was great. And Bruce Beresford, who's done like two of my Tender Mercies and Driving Miss Daisy, two of my favorite films of all time. Night Three was Thomas Carter. Thomas Carter has directed some great sports films, which I thought was really interesting because Night Three is about cockfighting, which for its time was the sport of the time. So I thought that was really interesting. And Mario Van Peebles has three daughters, and Night Two is all about Kizzy, this daughter that grows up and becomes a sort of badass warrior. So he was perfect for that night. So all three of them have a personal connection sort of to the story.
You know, Mark, they sent me a preview of episode one, and I finished watching episode one, and those last few minutes where Kunta Kinte is getting whipped and being asked to say his name, you would imagine that with everything we've been exposed to these days, that such a scene, that we'd be jaded to such a scene, but it's still incredibly well shot and impactful, and it had me cringing.
Well, thank you. I mean, that was a critically important scene, and I'm so happy about that you say that, because that scene represents, in sort of that 4-minute period of time, what this whole miniseries is about. And that is about stripping away of identity. Because unlike most torture scenes or whipping scenes or anything, it's usually punishment. It's being given as a method of punishment or something. In this particular scene, it is about, in the moment, getting somebody to give up everything who he is, giving up his identity. His identity is literally whipped out of him so that he no longer is Kunta Kinte. He becomes this Americanized Toby. So it had to be as difficult as possible, because if Kunta Kinte changed his name after getting whipped two or three times, then he is no longer a hero.
Yeah.
That would be too easy. He needed to hold on to it where he was almost near death till it became clear to him that the real hero here is the hero that decides to live, carry on the traditions of his family, pass down the stories of his family and who they are, so that eventually a guy named Alex Haley could write a book about this whole family that explains the entire sort of American slave trade.
So before I let you go, Mark, I have to ask you, because we're living in such divisive times, I'm not going to ask you what you think this series is going to mean for America, but I'm going to ask you what you hope this series would say to white America, because that seems to be the hip phrase these days.
Yes. You know, there's been a lot of discussion as we've been developing, producing, and, you know, talking to reporters like yourself on the show, a lot of, you know, how important it is for Black America to see their roots and to understand from where they come. I argue that it's equally, perhaps more important for white America to see this film, because my 16-year-old white boy often wonders or doesn't, I think, completely understand why Black America is angry. Why are they in the streets of Ferguson? Why are they in, you know, what is it that they are angry about? He needs to understand it just like young Black America needs to understand it. They both, we are all one here. They need to understand from where they come so they can address where we are today and look at the future, both Black and white. It's the history of this country. You know, there's that saying, you know, you put your hand, you burn your hand in the fire and then you learn from that. If you've never put your hand in the fire and burned your finger, then you might not know that running into a burning building is going to kill you. So it's critically important to tell these stories over and over again. And just like almost 40 years later, I've produced what my father did. I hope that 40 years from now, somebody will produce Roots again. Perhaps one of my children produce it again and tell the story yet again. Because it takes time to heal. It takes time to change. And we have to keep telling the story over and over again.
Wonderful. Mark, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Absolutely, Uma. Thank you.
That was Mark Wolper, executive producer of the all-new Roots. The four-part miniseries stars Forest Whitaker, Lawrence Fishburne, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, Anika Noni Rose, Anna Paquin, T.I., and Malachi Kirby as Kunta Kinte. You can catch the global premiere on History, that's Astro 555 and 575 in HD. It starts on Tuesday, the 31st of May, and runs all the way through Friday, the 3rd of June. You've been listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or Black Forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.